This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
Off and rolling midweek Wednesday, September 25th, 2024 is the date. Welcome into the Gabe Kuhn Show. I am your host, former Memphis Tiger offensive lineman Gabe Kuhn, on X at G_Kuhn71. I'm alongside the executive producer of the Gabe Kuhn Show. That would be Connor Dunning on X at CDunning929. Connor, how's it going, brother?
What's up, man?
I never thought we'd be talking about UNLV this much this week, but with the Pac-12, them holding the keys to the Pac-12's future destiny, and with this new story about their quarterback, Matthew Sluka, deciding to redshirt, I guess we're talking a bunch of UNLV running Rebs today, especially off the top of the show. This is nuts, but we have 3 hours to talk on the way, courtesy of 92.9 FM, ESPN, and yours truly. We're going to get to overreaction, not an overreaction, as we normally do off the top on a Wednesday. As far as guests are concerned, Colton Denning, 4:30. From Two Stripes CPD to talk about college football in general. 5 o'clock, David Cobb will join. And David Cobb is from CBS Sports, covering college football and college basketball. Then 6 o'clock to talk about the Tigers and the Pac-12 and why that didn't go through. We're going to bring on Jonah Dillon from the Commercial Appeal. He covers the Tigers football, most notably, but also covers the Grizzlies. I'll probably ask him a Derrick Rose question or two by the end of that conversation. We'll hop into the Blitz at 6:30, talk about Georgia-Bama. Brent Venables naming his freshman Michael Hawkins Jr. the starter over Jackson Arnold. And we also have some NBA news. I'm sure you saw this, Connor. Kawhi Leonard, you got to love it, don't you? Underwent a knee surgery. And the Clippers officials are apparently, quote-unquote, optimistic about his progress.
Deja vu. Kawhi Leonard having surgery in September before an NBA season? No way.
And then his NBA team being optimistic, in air quotes, about his progress. But, yeah, we've heard that before. But I've just laid out the show, so let's go ahead and get into overreaction, not an overreaction.
All right, Gabe. The Pac-12 is still trying to find an eighth member to make them whole. So while we're waiting to see what happens, I need your stance right now. Memphis made the correct decision, staying in the AAC for now. Overreaction, not an overreaction.
Thank you for using for now. Thank you for saying for now. It's not an overreaction. For now, this was the right financial decision. I know people want to talk about the competitive nature of what the new Pac-12 could be with San Diego State and Washington State and Oregon State and Boise State. But at the same time, this decision can't just be made off competition. I've said it a million times. How many times have I said it, honestly? I feel like I'm just, beating a dead horse at this point. If this situation and this decision was made strictly off of competitive, for competitive reasons, you make the move. But that's not how this works. Memphis is not sitting on some war chest of money. In fact, they're probably a little overextended. They have to deal with the Liberty Bowl now, Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium. It's in their name, so they have to deal with the upkeep of it. If they went to the Pac-12, they have to deal with travel expenses. And, yeah, you remember the whole thing about an exit fee? It was going to be upwards of $25 million, and the Pac-12 was only going to pay $2.5 million worth of that. I know that there's this overwhelming thought from, Memphis fans of, well, everybody else figures out a way to do it, to get to a better conference. Well, Memphis is not positioned to do it like those other schools are. And I think people don't understand that. And I know, I heard some people discussing it. Oh, that's a defeatist attitude. Well, is it a defeatist attitude or a realistic attitude about where we're at? Again, Memphis to the Pac-12 would have admittedly fired me up for the future. There's no doubt about it. But money is an unequivocal issue and something that if you feel like they made the wrong decision, you have to address it. if somebody asks you where the money's coming from, and your response is "I don't know," that should tell you all you need to know about the money and financial concerns of making this move are. And again, if it's just about competition, you go. But this program, this athletic department, they have projects they're dealing with. They're a little overextended in money. You've gotten Fred Smith to pay a whole bunch of different things with NIL and the stadium renovations. He's a little overextended right now. I don't know if he was willing to pay to get into a non-power conference in the Pac-12. So it was a financial problem, and I think they made the best financial decision for themselves for the time being. Now, who knows? In 3 years, if the Pac-12 works out, and an exit fee goes down to a certain extent in the AAC, maybe we can revisit this conversation. But for the time being, this was the correct decision for the University of Memphis. And I have no real doubts about that. I think people need to stop thinking about it in the sort of competition aspect and start thinking about it realistically based on the type of money and finances this athletic department has had over the years. It's never been great.
Well, I think yesterday we had the discussion about if this was for one of the power conferences and it was a $25 million price to get into one of the power conferences, you absolutely do that. And if Memphis turned that down because of finances, I think that there would be justified anger there because, hey, this was your opportunity to get into a power. And if you're just letting $25 million, which is a significant amount of money, get in between that, that's short-sighted. I also do think that it is fair to be upset with the previous regime at Memphis who signed a deal with the American that said, hey, we're going to pay a significant fee to leave. There is no world in which it should be that amount of money to leave the American. But unfortunately, that's what it is now. So Memphis had to take all these things into consideration. And then on top of it, there is zero guarantee right now of a TV deal being much better than you are right now. And you had the discussion with me last week, and I asked you the question, what's the lowest number that you would leave the American for to go to the Pac-12? And you said $12 million. And now it appears like $12 million might be the ceiling
of
what they
like. With Memphis and like all these other schools from the AAC, maybe you could get there.
Right.
But they're not going to get there now. There's just no chance. And also, that $12 to $15 million estimation, oh, wow. Oh, wow. Okay, let's pause that. But, sorry
mental
about that.
Mental health is important right now for Memphis fans. But I'm listening, but we'll get to you in a moment.
That $12 to $15 million that was put out there as an estimation from Navigate, you got to realize the Pac-12 paid Navigate to give them a good estimation. And in that sort of $12 to $15 million range, you can make it a pretty good case that Navigate was, you know, speaking on their behalf, trying to talk up a deal because they don't actually have one on the table until they get 8 members and become an actual conference. You could argue that that was more of an advocate type of estimation than a real estimation, even if Memphis and South Florida and Tulane ended up in that conference. So you had to take all these things into consideration. And the more we start to see about the Pac-12, Connor, this is the extra part of why I think this was the right decision for now. The more you start to see the way the Pac-12 is dealing with this right now, the more you start to realize they're not good business people. They're just not.
This is the conference that got dissolved.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They're operating on a whim. I see. They're operating on a whim. Teresa Gold was the deputy commissioner of the Pac-12 when George Kliavkoff let it go into the dustpan. You know what I mean? Like, this is still somebody who oversaw the destruction of that conference, yet she's trying to bring it back from the dead. And they're just going from school to school to school to school to school to school and saying, hey, will you come down? Oh, we'll only cover $2.5 million of your exit fees. And they ultimately say no. They commit to their conference, and it doesn't work out. And now you have them in ongoing litigation with the Mountain West. Now the Mountain West, with the exit fees they're going to get from the schools that have already left for the Pac-12, they're offering for the 7 members they have, including UNLV, who is kind of the new Memphis, if you will, of this situation, where if they leave, other schools will follow and the Pac-12 could be whole. But the Mountain West is offering a bunch of signing bonuses with the money they're getting from exit fees and potentially from the poaching fees that the Pac-12 is trying to fight against right now. When we talk about that scheduling agreement that they agreed to in 2024, it looks like there was a poaching penalty in there that the Pac-12 agreed to, where it's $10 million for the first team and then $1 million on top of that $10 million for every other team that you poach from the Mountain West after that. So you could be talking about $100 million in the pockets of the Mountain West by the time this litigation is over with. And if they're able to get signing bonuses down on the table for a place like UNLV, UNLV may stay. Because UNLV, based on what we're going to talk about in a second, it's not like they're overwhelmingly equipped to pay some big buyout number or exit fee number to go to the Pac-12. The more I sit back and look at how the Pac-12 is operating from a business standpoint, the better I feel about the decision that the higher-ups at the University of Memphis made, because they're very unserious, what's going on at the Pac-12. What's going on with the business people, the brass of the Pac-12, is embarrassing right now.
It makes no sense to me why they haven't just gone to the Mountain West and said, hey, I understand that we tried to raid you, and we kind of did raid you, but at the end of the day, we weren't able to get these AAC teams. Both of us needed to survive as conferences. We could become the best group of five conference out there if we merged. I don't understand. They're 7-7. Merge, you idiots. Yep. Yep. And I feel like everybody across the country now is screaming, just merge. Just merge, kiss, make up, get over it. Get all this litigation gone. You could still have a really successful conference with the teams that are left in the Mountain West and with the teams in the Pac-12. It solves a lot of your money issues. You will get a good TV deal with that grouping of teams.
To think about...
But doing all of this just feels like you're adding extra steps.
Thinking about why this
and
happened...
And it's petty.
Thinking about why this happened is probably the pettiest thing for me. This happened because Oregon State and Washington State couldn't take the fact that they got left behind and are no longer Power 5 schools. That's why this happened. You're letting Oregon State and Washington State run the day. That's not a good business plan to me. I'm sorry. And it just continues to highlight how unserious they are acting trying to get this conference back together.
It's like if Fredo all of a sudden became the Godfather.
It's so, exactly. It's horrible. It's horrible.
I'm smart. Yes. I got passed over. Yes. I'm smart.
Correct.
It's not what I wanted.
Correct.
Dude. All right, Fredo, go on the boat.
Yeah, like seriously. So I'm very confident for now in the current state of where we're at in college athletics, where Memphis fits into it. I'm pretty confident they made the correct decision at the moment for their best interest and for the interest going forward.
And
but we will
clear.
See how it ages. This is right. This is something that is still up for as the years pass, we can see how it all works itself out. But for right now, I think Memphis made the right decision for themselves.
Well, this is one of those specific situations in which the more information that comes out, our opinions will change based on that information. And that's why last Friday when we left, I thought it was a no-brainer for the Memphis to go to the Pac-12. As information came out over the weekend, I was hesitant about it. And then by the time we got to Monday, we were like, oh, yeah, there's no way this can happen, especially with that $2.5 million news that came out. It just did not feel like a smart move financially for Memphis. That being said, it is still really disappointing that this didn't happen. Just because you understand that this might be the correct move for now doesn't mean you're happy about it.
No.
And doesn't mean that you even have full support of it. It just means that you understand why it may have happened. It just stinks because it does feel like that Memphis is kind of getting left behind again, but it's different because it's not that this isn't a power conference. It's not an automatic qualifying conference.
Sure.
It's not
better. $15 million competition-wise,
TV deal.
No doubt.
Right.
No doubt. But I will say this.
Better competition.
I'm
going to
buck against a little bit of what I said, and maybe you will see this as me talking out of both sides of my mouth, even though I'm really not. I'm trying to make it very clear where I stand on this. As the years pass, Memphis and the people, powers that be, at some point will need to take a gamble.
Yes.
But was this the perfect situation to take a gamble on? No. At some point, though, when it comes to a $25 million exit fee and a different conference or a better situation, you're going to have to pony up that money, whether it makes financial sense on the forefront or not. If you feel like the situation is going to be better on the other side, from a competition standpoint, you can make up the ground monetarily, financially, you're going to have to take a gamble at some point, or you're going to be left behind.
100% agree.
I just don't think that this was the perfect situation for this athletic department and this conference. This was not the best time to take that gamble. That's where I stand.
Right. I'll say it again. If it was $25 million to get into one of the power conferences, you absolutely do that. And that is when you figure out the money. You figure out the money for a power conference. I'm not sure it's worth it to figure out the money for a conference that doesn't have an automatic qualifier, can't guarantee a significant more amount of TV revenue. There's just a lot of question marks.
To pony up $25 million to work with these idiots? That's my problem. To work with these people. No. To me, that's where I draw my line. The more that has come out, the more I feel very strong about what Memphis did, because you look at the Pac-12, and they are truly, and I really truly believe this, they are embarrassing themselves right now. This is awful business that they're doing right now. Just pay attention, and you'll realize that as well. I know that people are still disappointed, but you have to pay attention to who is on the other side and who you would have had to deal with if you pay that $25 million. And I, for $25 million, do not want to work with those people. I think that's also a reason that this did not happen.
It has also gone from Memphis and the four and the AAC schools to UConn football, which
UConn is football only.
A steep drop. Holy crap.
UConn football only. And it's
if you're a Pac-12 fan or of the remaining schools, that probably felt like you got hit by a bus.
It's
you thought you were getting Memphis, Tulane. Hey, UConn football. The best I can do is UConn football.
Well, also, I'm just saying, you know, if you wanted to make it happen, you had an opportunity to do it. You supposedly have all this money, offer more than $2.5 million.
I want to ask you a very real question.
For a buyout, for an exit fee.
If they looked at Memphis and the schools from the American and the Pac-12 had said, we're going to pay Memphis's exit fee, but we're not going to pay the rest of y'all's, or we'll only give the rest of you $2.5 million, do you think the rest would have gone with Memphis still? Do you think they would have had to?
I think they would have been, their hands may have been tied, but it still would have been tough for those schools to afford it. UTSA is not in a perfect situation to afford $25 million. Tulane, probably not at all. I mean, the rest of these schools are still, the reason they didn't all go is because I think they all put their heads together and said, yeah, we're not going to be able to afford this long term. The financial gamble we'll have to make, I don't think is worth the, it's worth our time.
You know, to be fair to Memphis for not killing the American, I do think the rest of these teams should throw the football games the rest of the season to Memphis. It just seems fair to me. It seems fair to me to guarantee that Memphis gets to at least the championship game. That seems fair, right?
All right, next. What do we got next?
No, not a good point. Not a good point? Okay.
It's a point. I don't know if it's a good one.
Moving on. After a 3-0 start, UNLV is dealing with this very serious issue. Their starting quarterback, Matthew Sluka, has decided to redshirt and hold out until next season after he claims that he was promised NIL funds that were never delivered. UNLV is screwed without Matthew Sluka. Overreaction, not an overreaction.
Overreaction. Pretty heavy overreaction, in my opinion. They have another quarterback that they got from Campbell that I think is a very talented guy. But let's go through this Matthew Sluka situation, because this is wild. I got a text, believe it or not, from John Martin last night at about 9 p.m., and he was talking to his betting groups. And he goes, yeah, you're friends with Barry Odom, right? I was like, yeah, of course I am. Like, we're pretty close. Had him on the show several times. He goes, you know, text him. I'm hearing some things about Matthew Sluka. And I go, what? What are you hearing? He said, I think from what I'm hearing that he's not going to play for the rest of the year. And I'm thinking, okay, injury or what's going on? Because I don't know if there was some type of ACL injury in practice or what. But at about midnight, 12:26 a.m. here in Memphis, and obviously that's 10 a.m. a.m. That's 10 p.m. where he's at. He puts out his statement saying that he's going to redshirt, transfer, and play a fifth year elsewhere because of not misappropriated, but NIL funds that were never delivered. And according to Matthew Sluka's agent, Marcus Cromartie, he told Ross Dellinger from Yahoo Sports that there was nothing signed, but coaches, and he said it was UNLV offensive coordinator Brennan Marion, promised Matthew Sluka $100,000. But they've only delivered $3,000 per month to this point. So this is all bad on all sides, but I'll get to sort of the nitty-gritty here. Brennan Marion has no business promising $100,000 at UNLV For God's sakes, Barry Odom had to ride a bull to try to get funds for that program. They don't have a bunch of NIL funds rolling in. So for him to think that $100,000 was even realistic on the recruiting trail to offer or to promise a guy like Matthew Slucka, who came from the FCS ranks from Holy Cross, is absolutely insane. So he's wrong on the front end if he did ever promise that. Now, on the other side, Matthew Slucka, here is what happened. The agent made it very clear to Ross Dellinger, never was any documentation signed by Matthew Slucka to get that $100,000. He didn't reach out to the collective until late August to try to get that money. And the agent, apparently, is not a registered agent in the state that the client he represents plays in, and he's not registered in the state of Nevada, and that is a misdemeanor in the state of Nevada. So, in my opinion here, yes, you're not supposed to go out of your way to promise things you can't deliver on the recruiting trail. But Matthew Slucka, his parents, and any agency he's been with, they failed him in this situation. They are the problem that ultimately led to this ouster and him trying to redshirt and leave. And from what I understand, his agent said, you beat Houston and you beat Kansas. Your NIL money, it's skyrocketed. You could redshirt, come back next year, and you can make a whole lot more money. The problem with that thought, Matthew Slucka, to this point in his UNLV career through three games, the most he's ever thrown for in a game is 161 yards. And do you know what his completion percentage is at this point, passing the ball? 43% completion percentage. As much as you can give him credit or try to give him credit for UNLV beating Kansas and Houston, the defense had a lot to do with that, and everybody else, the running game, everything else had more to do with that than Matthew Slucka. So I look at the Matthew Slucka side of things, and I don't quite understand the decision he's making right this second. I don't know if, like the agent said, I don't know if his actual market value has increased just from winning those two games, because he didn't have much to say in those two games. He wasn't the main reason that they were able to get over top.
And when you actually dive into the stats further and you look at it game by game, the Houston win, very impressive win, good win for UNLV. The defense gave up 7 points in that game. The offense scored 27. Slucka had 71 yards in the air. Kansas, really impressive win for UNLV. Defense only gave up 20 points. Slucka, 86 yards through the air. They weren't winning because of him.
And they got lucky in that game because he had a fumble late in that game that ended up being a 9-yard gain because his guy fell on
now,
it.
Now, he did run the ball well against Kansas. He ran the ball well, but that's all he could do. But what is also interesting is some of the UNLV players have gone to social media
and they're
since it has come
him.
Out. And it appears as if the support is for the new quarterback.
Yeah, well, they kind of have to at this point, right?
It seems as if, though, they were waiting. I don't know. It seems like that they didn't like him, Slucka, to be quite honest, based on some of the tweets I've seen.
Would you like him? If you feel like you did most of the work to go beat the two opponents that he's getting credit for, by according to his agent, why would you like him? It's like the defense carried us those games. Why do you feel like you were the one that was able to go make those things happen? But they're going to replace him. The reason they're not screwed, they have a guy named Haj Malik Williams, who's a redshirt senior transfer from Campbell. 19 TDs to 13 INTs. He can run the ball as well. He's very similar. He had a very similar stat line at Campbell that Matthew Slucka had at Holy Cross. So they're just going to throw him in there. And I think most of the players on that offense feel a lot more confident that he's all in than Matthew Slucka, without question. I mean, Ricky White, who will probably be an NFL draft pick, he's been a 1,000-yard receiver at UNLV, I think, 2 years running now. There was somebody basically saying, I wouldn't be surprised if Haj Malik Williams throws for 3 TDs and Ricky White has 150 yards. And, Ricky White responded on Twitter saying, yeah, that's probably going to happen. I think it's Jackson Woodard, their star middle linebacker, who's the first game of the year against Houston, had like 3 sacks and 4.5 tackles for loss, 11 tackles. They mentioned that Haj Malik Williams was going to take over. There was a tweet about that. Jackson Woodard basically said, about time, I think that was those were the two words he used, about time. So it feels like UNLV is ready to move forward with their new quarterback, and they're not worried about Matthew Sluka anymore. But this is just a terrible situation. It's kind of funny. You know, the day before Matthew Sluka decided to make this decision, he had an interview with local Las Vegas reporters. He had an interview about how much he loved being at UNLV and how the early season had gone and how he's excited for what they can accomplish this year. And then only a night later, he decided that they haven't delivered on their NIL promises to me, so we need to move in a different direction. But this is also just an overwhelming problem with the NIL lack of oversight. These guys are being promised things that are not being delivered upon. And also, when you look at the school and the university, they don't really have a whole bunch of, power when it comes to a player deciding to do this. A player can decide to do this at any point, get in the transfer portal, move on with their life. And then they're left without a quarterback or whatever player it is that decides to get in the transfer portal. It's just, it's all bad. It's all bad. And this is where we need more oversight and understanding of what's going on behind the scenes.
Yeah, well, because after everything that we've said, I still feel kind of bad for Sluka because it is very clear that he got bad advice from people and he kind of screwed himself in this type of situation. And for 2 years now, you and I have been saying that the solution to this is schools have got to start making these kids employees. They've got to start making them employees because when you do that and you have a contract, you are protecting the school, but you're also kind of protecting the kids from themselves.
Yeah.
Like he would be protected from making a bad decision like this if he was under contract.
And you're also protecting the kid. He can get his money. If it's in writing, also you're going to have to pay the money.
Yes, very much so that. But just because you are having a great season during your contract does not mean that you automatically get a salary increase. Like John Morant during his rookie season couldn't go to the Grizzlies and say, "Hey, we're on a run here. You got to start paying me more right now." That's not how these things work. Under a contract situation, having these kids be employees, a lot of these problems would be solved. I don't understand the refusal to do it, because what it has created is this wild, wild west version of college athletics where everybody's flying around, there's no program stability in most cases, and it is really frustrating for fans, once again, to have to deal with all of this mess. It's nuts. Like, there's just the stories that we've been dealing with the last few weeks in college athletics are absolutely insane.
Yes. Now, UNLV Athletics put out a statement saying football player Matthew Sluka's representative made financial demands upon the university and its NIL collective in order to continue playing. UNLV Athletics interpreted these demands as a violation of the NCAA pay-for-play rules as well as Nevada state law. UNLV does not engage in such activity, nor does it respond to implied threats. UNLV has honored all previously agreed-upon scholarships for Matthew Sluka. UNLV has conducted its due diligence and will continue to operate its programs within the framework of the NCAA rules and regulations as well as Nevada state laws. So they've made it clear, yeah, we're not going to put up with this. He can go if he wants to go. We don't really care. And if you're looking for someone to blame ultimately, yeah, you can toss some blame at, you know, Brendan Marion, if he's the guy who said we can give you $100,000 when you get here, if he said that to Matthew Sluka on the recruiting trail, you can blame Matthew Sluka and his agents for not signing anything and getting anything in writing. You can blame them. There's some side blame to them, but ultimately this falls on the NCAA. It's the wild, wild west. There's no guardrails. There is no understanding for how these deals need to be ironed out. You're trying to find out who's at fault, and you point directly at who's usually at fault. And that is that four-letter organization, the NC2A. So there's that. Let's go ahead and grab a break on that note. We'll come back and talk with Colton Denning from Two Stripes CPD. We'll talk about this, and we'll get into Week 5 of college football, probably talk some Alabama and Georgia, plenty on the other side, 92.9 FM ESPN. Colton Denning writes college football words for Two Stripes CPD. You can follow them at Two Stripes CPD or him on X at Dubsco, and also go to his YouTube channel, youtube.com/Colton Denning. He posts a lot, hits of the week, the whole nine yards. Colt, what's happening, brother? How are you?
I'm actually working on the hits of the week video right now. I'm doing splendid, Gabe. After we have our conversation, I'm heading down to Oakland to celebrate the final night game at the Coliseum.
No.
At least for a few years until that idiot owner John Fisher and his incompetent front office staff managed to fumble whatever they have going on next in Sacramento or Vegas or whatever cockamamie plan they have going on, and they end up right back in Oakland in a few years. So I'm going to pay my respects. I worked for the A's for 3 years, so it's my first time back there. since the 2019 wild card game against the Rays. So, going to pay my respect to the Oakland A's.
I talked about it yesterday, the open letter that John Fisher wrote to the people of Oakland. Now, try not to cuss, but what did you think about his nice little tabbed open letter trying to soften the blow, I guess, of leaving Oakland? I guess that was his effort.
I'll give him one thing. He's consistent. It's nothing. Nothing I read in that letter was, I was like, oh, that's very out of character for John Fisher. I mean, in the first part of the statement, even, he brought up, you know, our success with the A's in Oakland. But hey, also, we did play in Philadelphia and Kansas City a century ago. So just right down to the studs, it was a very vintage performance from John Fisher in that letter.
Yeah, on brand. Very on brand. But I did. When he said they tried, he said, one thing I will tell the people of Oakland, we tried. No, you didn't. You did the exact playbook that I saw with the St. Louis Rams leaving L.A. Every time that the city of Oakland was trying to pony up money, you asked for more. And when you do that, that is a bad faith negotiation, and you're trying to get out. And honestly, he had help from Rob Manfred because they want a organization. They want a Major League Baseball team in Las Vegas as well.
Funnily enough, the Cronkies signed my checks once too, so I've worked for the whole gamut here.
Yeah, I got you. Now, speaking of checks that aren't signed, I know you talk about signed checks, but Matthew Sluka, UNLV starting quarterback, announces he'll redshirt, won't play the rest of the season, and he's likely to transfer, play a fifth year elsewhere because it feels like he can get more money. It sounds like he was promised by the UNLV coaching staff he'd get somewhere around $100,000, never got it in writing, and he's been paid $3,000 since then. This is the exact problem that we talked about with NIL. I don't think people that don't like NIL should do a victory lap on this. I think that what they should do is hold the NCAA accountable for the disgusting rules and the lack of oversight they've had over this whole thing since it began.
Absolutely, and to me, as this story is ongoing and we've seen another UNLV player, a running back, come out and say he's leaving as well, this story to me has been the perfect example, especially in college football, of why sometimes, a lot of times even, the best route to take as a neutral party or observer is to wait and see how things play out before you start yelling about it, because it's already taken so many different twists and turns. And I think at the end of the day, it's a classic college football story in the sense that the person that got done wrong here was the kid. The player got done wrong, whether it was UNLV's fault or his representation or his family's fault, whatever. The kid had to pay the price for the adults messing it up, whoever messed it up. And that's, I think it still remains to be seen. But at the end of the day, the kid had to take the brunt of whatever the adults did here.
Yes, I agree with that. But it is kind of funny. As much as I liked the thought of Matthew Sluka as the quarterback for UNLV, he hasn't been very good this year, has he? I know that he still was promised $100,000. You should deliver on your promises. But 43.8% of your throws being completed, not great. Not great at all.
And I think it says something that their captain, who is a linebacker, tweeted out something like when they named that the backup is going to be the starter.
Said about time. Let's go.
About time. Yeah. So, and I don't think that you're going to find, like, nobody, Barry Odom, whoever else in the coaching staff, isn't telling him to be like, hey, you need to do that for optics. I think if the team leader is saying that, then it kind of says something. So I think UNLV will be fine on the field, and we'll see what happens off it. And, people are saying this is going to start popping up elsewhere, and probably, but this should also be a nice little reminder to schools to get their ducks in a row in case they don't have them already.
But it is disgusting, the fact that this is the first time UNLV started 3-0 since 1984. They are legitimate college football playoff threats, contenders this year to at least make it there because of the way they've started. And they've beat Kansas and Houston already. Like, this is, you talked about realignment being sort of water in your sock. This is probably more water in your sock, right?
Yeah, I was just about to say that. Realignment, this. And it's not like something where it's a, you don't want to see a kid get jerked out of money, but it's not like a tragic somebody losing their life, something really, really bad happening to somebody. It's just another one of those stories that's going to sink in, and it's going to be covered from a national perspective, not even just from college football media, but this is going to be a story outside of that in sports media where the take from just the general public is going to be, oh, well, that's another sign that college football's dying. College football's on the rock. So it's just another one of those things where it's like, why can't this happen in April? Why can't something right. like this happen in May? Why has it got to happen late September?
Yep, 100%. Now, let's talk about the week that was in college football, get some takeaways here. Let's start with Friday, final in overtime. Illinois gets over top of Nebraska on the road. And Nebraska looked good. Tell me if you've heard this before. They looked good through three quarters, and then the fourth quarter they fell apart. Overtime, they fell apart. It doesn't matter if Dylan Raiola's the quarterback. Doesn't matter who they're playing. Doesn't matter if it's home or road. Doesn't matter if Matt Rhule, Scott Frost, doesn't matter who's the coach. They're always going to get beat by the fourth quarter. It is brutal. I can't imagine how Nebraska fans feel.
Yeah, you could tell me that Mike Riley was the coach in this game for Nebraska, or Scott Frost, Matt Rhule, whoever you've won over the last 10 years, and especially whatever it's been the last five. But Nebraska, it's to the point where, and my dad actually called me afterwards and said, the next time you're on Gabe's show, I want you to bring this up. I'm sick of hearing people talk about one-score losses like they're not just losses. It doesn't make it any better when you lose by one score right. versus whether you lose by three or four, whatever. It's still a loss. And when you look at Nebraska in their last eight overtimes, they've combined 27 plays, negative 20 yards, four interceptions, zero first downs, 0 points. I don't care. Like, at some point, that just is what it is. It may be the biggest outlier of all time, but it is what it is. And as somebody who hates Nebraska more than pretty much any other program, I got to say, Gabe, I'm loving it.
You
I really
said
am.
Negative 20 yards over the last eight overtime periods?
Yeah, and I think a lot of that is probably due to
what happened this? What happened?
Raiola.
Yeah, okay. That makes it, but damn, that's brutal.
Yeah, no, like to not have one first down in your last eight overtimes, that's ugly.
And I know you say, like, okay, one score losses, it doesn't, you know. Your dad said it doesn't make it any less a loss, because it's the truth. But it honestly makes it worse that they're 9-33 in those games. It shows that they have learned how to lose over the years, no matter who is playing and who is the coach.
Yeah, and, you know, something I saw, and I didn't really dig too deep into it, but I did see that Matt Rhule said something along the lines of, hey, our older players got tight as the game went on. And
isn't that the opposite of what it should be?
Yeah, and I think what Nebraska fans and people who read that took it as is, hey, these guys are used to this culture of when we get into these games, we lose. But I saw Raiola miss on a throw late in that game.
Yep, that would have won
and
the game.
He played well for the most part, but in overtime too, he also kind of took things into his own hands and tried to be the hero. So I don't think it was just older players who were getting tight. And I thought that was something Scott Frost did too in his first couple years at Nebraska, where in year two he was mentioning stuff from Mike Riley's staff and Mike Riley's roster that I'm never a fan of that when coaches do that, especially when you're in your second year. It's time to move on, and if you don't have those guys who are still a part of the old staff kind of locked into what you're doing, that's on you at that point because you've had multiple years to get it done. So I still think that, you know, Matt Rhule's a good coach and they'll figure it out, but they're definitely not the contender that people prop them up to be after the Colorado game.
And I also get annoyed with the fact, regardless of how good the quarterback is, you can't insulate them from any wrongdoing. Everybody wants to blame the field goal kicker for shanking a kick at the end of that game. You don't get that kick unless Dylan Raiola misses a guy running open by 5 yards.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to be a discussion of like, oh, he's actually a fraud. He's not as good as people say he is. But it's just toning down kind of the hype, and hey, those are passes where even a quarterback as young as he is, you got to make that with the game on the line. Yep. And if you want to freestyle as much as he does, you have to make that throw. And so that's something he'll learn from, but it is something where you have to put it on him, and you can't just baby the quarterback. You can't on one hand be like, this guy's a superstar, and on the other hand say, oh, well, it wasn't his fault, he's young. Because he's already in the fire now.
Yep. Now, holler at me about Tennessee. They go on the road against Oklahoma. Nico's first true road game. He played really well in the SEC, first true road game in the SEC. But he played really well, 13 for 21, 194 in a TD. But the story here is Tennessee's defense. How much did this game convince you that this is a potential national title contender? Are you there yet, or are you still waiting?
I'm still waiting, but I'm encouraged. And the big reason that I'm waiting is because Oklahoma hasn't looked impressive offensively at all this season. And whether it's Jackson Arnold's fault or the play calling, whatever it may be, they've just been so disjointed and ugly offensively that I do like the way that Tennessee, because again, and we've talked about this over the past few weeks with Florida State, and when you go into a place like Norman and win as convincingly as Tennessee did, that's impressive. That's a tough place to win, especially at night. And so they didn't try to do too much offensively, and their defense took care of business. So I think that more than anything is what impresses me, is that, hey, it wasn't just that Tennessee won convincingly. It wasn't like they needed to go out and win 40-9. They just took care of business in a really tough environment, in a situation where there was a lot of extra emotion into it with Josh Heupel returning there. And he tried to downplay it all week, but in the post game and in the locker room, I don't know if you saw that clip.
I did.
You could tell what it meant to him. And so for them to just go in and win, that was cool. And I think that Tennessee is starting to become one of those teams where you say, okay, you got to keep your eye on them because they're coming.
And they found a new way to win, because Josh Heupel, if you watch what they did in the you know, second half, really going into the fourth quarter as well, they dumbed down the offense and didn't do anything. They were relying on their defense, which was something in the past we have always said they cannot do. It's something they have not been able to do, but it looks like that's something they can lean on this year. Obviously, they're going to get tested. Everybody still wonders about their secondary, but we shall see. Now, on the other side of that, Oklahoma switched to Michael Hawkins Jr., a 3-star unheralded recruit at the quarterback position. And it looks like Brent Venables is going to stick with him going into this week against Auburn on the road. What do you think about that situation? I'm not necessarily convinced Brent Venables handled this the best way.
No, neither am I, and I think that OU is starting to bear the fruit now of the move to the SEC, and some of that fruit isn't quite as sweet as Oklahoma and Oklahoma fans maybe want it to be, because the big thing that I was worried about with Oklahoma in moving to the SEC is there were years, even in the Bob Stoops era, where Oklahoma would go 8-5 or 9-4, and then immediately the next year they would pop back up and get back to wherever their standard was, 10-2, 11-1, and make a run at the playoff or the BCS at that time. In the SEC, you can't do that anymore. When you have a down year, the next year you're going to play a murderer's row again.
Yep.
And for Oklahoma, they still have to play Texas. They still have to go on the road to Ole Miss. They still have to play at Missouri. And they still have to play Alabama and LSU to close out the season. And when your least problem or your least worry is, oh, we have to go play at Auburn and then South Carolina, and you're already kind of discombobulated, that is a tough spot to be in. That Auburn game, to me, it's kind of my game in the week, in the sense that I like to have a car crash game, and that's what Arkansas-Auburn was last week. That's the car crash game this week, because whoever loses that game, that fan base is going to be down bad extremely.
Yeah, and I got to say, if I want one fan base to be down bad because of who their head coach is, I'm sorry, I have to go with Auburn. Hugh Freeze and the way he has handled himself this year, blaming all his quarterbacks for all of his misgivings, and then going after, I'm sure you have heard it at this moment, or this week, you had to hear him on his coach's show talk about, well, yeah, I love Sam Pittman. I hope he wins the rest of his games, but if we play that Arkansas team 9 more times, we win 9 more times. It's never seemingly his fault, is it? Auburn, it's never Hugh Freeze's fault.
Who as a fan base around the country wants to hear their head coach say that and say, you know what, I agree with him. If we played them 9 more times, we'd probably win. No, because that doesn't take away the reality of the situation. And when you have a fan base that's as manic and schizophrenic at times as Auburn, that's not going to play well. And Hugh Freeze really is a guy where just repeatedly he goes out of his way to not take accountability for things, whether it's on the field or off the field. And I think that if you're Auburn, if things really go south, can you fire another coach again after 2 seasons? Maybe, maybe not. I don't know what their situation is financially or what his buyout is, but when you have a coach that's doing that this early into the season, who...
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age. Wisdom, experience, and knowledge. Just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things, like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain. All symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. MIDI clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. MIDI offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
Is supposed to be the offensive guy.
Yes.
That's supposed to be his forte, and when the offense isn't working, it doesn't matter if he's calling plays or not.
When the offense isn't working, he says, I'm going back to calling plays. Again, it's always insulated.
Yeah, he's the main one responsible for that. And so Auburn is in a really, really tough spot right now. And if they lose to an Oklahoma team with a brand-new starting quarterback, who, like you said, is kind of unheralded, and a team that's scuffling right now, I don't know how much hotter it can get, but it's going to get hot for Hugh Freeze.
All right, now holler at me about your early week thoughts of Georgia on the road against Bama, 6:30 ABC. This is the game we have seen so far this year with the most implications. What are your thoughts at least right this second? I know you things can change. We'll see an injury report, but holler at me.
What a coincidence that both teams are coming off a bye. Who could have ever thought that? I'm like everybody else. I'm so excited for this game. I think that it's probably good for Georgia to get a bye week after just a weird performance against Kentucky. I don't think they're going to play like that again. And for Alabama, it's really time to see who they are. And I think for the most part, they've looked impressive. They were great in the second half against South Florida, even though that score was a little bit misleading. And then the Wisconsin game, they just bullied them for basically the whole game. And when Tyler Van Dyke got injured, it was over at that point. So I'm honestly, Gabe, I'm not sure what to expect here. And that's what I really like about this game, because it isn't Nick Saban versus Kirby Smart. This is the first chance, really, for Kalen DeBoer to make that huge statement at Alabama, and you got him at home. And so I can't wait to see how this one plays out. I know that isn't great radio and like diving into how the game's really going to go, but I just want to see this one play out, because in this new system, it's not going to be a killer for either team by any measure.
Sure.
To lose this game. But we are going to learn a lot about Alabama, I think. And we're going to come away from this no matter what happens. From Georgia, I think just saying, you know, Georgia's Georgia. But for Alabama, this is Kalen DeBoer's chance to really make that first statement.
And we're going to come out of this game with a new number one in the country, according to the AP poll. I can tell you that pretty confidently. Now, last thing, depressing thing for me, are my Memphis Tigers on the chopping block after that performance against Navy?
The margin for error is slim now. And I think if you're a Boise State fan, you're probably really excited, because now you probably have the, you know, quote-unquote better loss to Oregon compared to losing to Navy. But, I mean, sometimes, as Phil Jackson said, I think after the Lakers played Houston one year and that series got tied up 3-3, you got to give the other team some bleeping credit. And you got to give Navy credit, because they played really well in that game. And when you give up 200 yards passing to Navy, like, it's game over. You're not going to be able to win that game. And Memphis did as much as they could offensively. But you're looking at an undefeated Navy team right now who, like, is it crazy to think at some point, and I don't know if there are any rules keeping them out of this, but, like, I know Army and Navy are both undefeated. Do we start talking about Army and Navy possibly as college football playoff contenders?
I'm not gonna count it out. I can't count it out at all. That Navy offense, it looks unbelievably good. And they've switched up a few things.
So
they throw,
hard to defend.
Yeah, and then Blake Horvath. They have that. That's the best quarterback they've had since what? Like Malcolm Perry. You remember Malcolm Perry? Seems like this.
Yeah,
this is a real
spinning.
Go ahead.
He was out there like juking dudes.
Yeah.
Dropping dimes.
And he ran a 90 yarder in. He ran a 90 yarder in, and no one could catch up to him. He's genuinely fast.
Yeah, and I think the good thing for Memphis is, you know, you've been brought down to earth, but you don't have a killer schedule. I think that the trips to South Florida and Tulane are the biggest things that I'm worried about. You know, maybe somewhere else they play a tight game, but they should be able to take care of business. And when you look at the rest of the top of G5, I'm really not impressed by Liberty at all, despite the fact that they're still undefeated. ECU had them on the ropes, and they came back. And then, I mean, I guess James Madison now is in the mix after what they did to North Carolina. And maybe there's a few other teams that I'm, you know, forgetting. But I think we can toss Northern Illinois aside after losing to Buffalo and just, like we said the last few weeks, the MAC cannibalizing itself. But I think if you're Navy, now you can't play the card of, like, we're undefeated, we can lose again.